Well, in the words of Bob Marley, the sun is shining and the weather is sweet here in Southern Oregon. I don't know if Bob Marley ever came to Southern Oregon, but this is Andy Pagg for XCMag.com, podcasting from the Rat Race. And after the first 4 days of pretty miserable weather, we've had two beautiful days. It's the 28th of June today, day six of the Rat Race, penultimate day, and the second day of really, really beautiful flying weather. And this is kind of typical Southern Oregon weather that we've been getting the last couple of days. This is the sort of weather you'd expect for this time of year. And Michael Siegel, the Swiss Gin test pilot, has been the one that's been making the most of it in the competition, having won both tasks so far. And today I'll be having a chat with him to find out what his secrets are and how come he's putting the American pilots to shame. So Michael Siegel's here at Rat Race. In fact, it's great to have such high-ranking international pilots coming to the little hill here in Woodrat. And Michael's been showing the American pilots how to do it. Won both tasks so far. And I think the second one yesterday, you won it by quite a margin. What's the secret to your success?
I don't know actually. I don't know actually myself. So, I guess it took me a long time to get that to this point as it, on which I am now, and I hope I still can improve. Yeah.
And you're a test pilot for Gin, so presumably you're super confident on the new Boom 9, which is invariably I think out of it's the top four wings in the competition here. So that's very clearly the wing to be on. Plus it's a wing that you've done all sorts of maneuvers on. So presumably you're super confident on it. Do you think that's part of it?
Actually not. I'm really confident when it comes to maneuvers. That's true because I've spent hours on the lakes this year. But the problem was I didn't got airtime at all. So the only time I could fly this glider was in Colombia and in Brazil, and that's it. So I pack out this glider here. So that's what the reason I came here. It's because I want to get some airtime out of testing, because I just was over the lake. And yeah, so I guess the US boys for now, they can fly still a little faster than I do.
and you, I mean, you chose to come to here to Woodrat, where there's a PWC competition going on in Europe, is that right? And but you decided to come here. What was behind that decision?
Yeah, stupid decision.
given the weather.
It was all about the weather. So they said that actually the region there is quite poor because it's raining, it has a lot of winds. And in contrast, they said that here they will fly every day and they're strong and the US boys are strong, and that's why I thought that we come here together with Thorsten. And then we were sitting here in the rain for 4 days. So and they were flying in France, so I said, oh, that's not a good idea. So, but now it turned quite well.
Yeah, that's paragliding. So let's talk a little bit about the Boom 9 then. So it seems to be the wing that's replacing the Nivyuk and the Enzo in terms of competition results. What's in the design that's making it so successful?
Yeah, it's the design and the passion we gave into this, because as soon as we remarked that the Boomerang X was not did not have the same performance as the others, we started to make new wings, and we were working really, really hard. I was there like 2 times in Korea for testing it, and Aaron Duragati was there as well. Oki did a great job, and it was crazy how much we worked. It was when I was there, we were working from 8 to 11 o'clock in the evening, and had dinner there in the factory, changing lines afterwards. And it was a really big effort, yeah.
Now, I've spoken to a few pilots that have said it is a handful to fly, maybe. And one pilot told me it kind of reminded him of the very early two liners in terms of pilot handling. Is that a fair criticism, do you think?
I don't know, because I don't have so much experience on the glider. I just can say for the points what I did on the lakes, it's quite okay. The maneuvers are okay. I never felt in the water, and I did 50 flights now. And yeah, I guess it is demanding, but comparing to other competition gliders, I think it's more or less same. Nivyuk is maybe a little bit easier, but the others, I think it's same. But to be honest, I was just in Colombia and here, and in Brazil, and there the conditions were smooth, so
cannot tell
much about this.
And one of the things that I've heard about it is that the some pilots kind of feel that it has a spin tendency, and so to overcome that, they're putting an extra loop on the mallions to just shorten the A's a little bit. Is that something you've come across?
No, I don't like to do that.
Because that effectively puts them out of certification.
Yeah. Not only... No, actually not. Because what they are looking for certification is the difference between A and B. And it seems like some gliders, after a dozen of hours or so, the Bs are shrinking a little bit.
Oh, okay.
I guess other manufacturers recognize this as well. And there we have to change something. And actually, it's not good to make a loop or something on the A's, but it's better to prolong the B's.
Right.
Because otherwise, I don't understand that, but Thorsten Engine says it's a difference if you make the B's longer or the A's shorter. So.
Okay. And so far, it's only the medium-sized Boom 9 that's certified. What's the kind of time scale for a small and a large?
We tried hard to certify the wings for the World Championship, the small and the large. But we were... The weather was so poor in Europe. We had almost no flying at all from winter to now. Even now, I guess it's still raining. And yeah, so we try hard to do this, but it takes a little while.
And the problems in Korea and the sort of production problems, is that also part of the factor that's slowing things down, or are you able to get around that?
Not with those gliders, because we have the patterns. The gliders are produced now. It's just about the trimming and testing over the water.
Okay.
But of course, for other prototypes, we were lacking a bit of production capacity.
Great. And what's next? Where are you off to next after Woodrat?
Yeah, it's quite funny because I have to leave tomorrow right after prize giving, or at least before 9 or 10 o'clock, because my flight will be in Portland at 6 in the morning. And I have to go back and straight to a field course from university.
Okay.
I will miss one morning, but they said it's okay.
Oh, that's nice.
Then 1 week of this, then...
And what are you studying?
Geography.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Almost last year, maybe. And then one week off, and then World Championship, the Worlds.
Great. Well, all the best. Good luck with the Worlds.
Thank you very much.
One of the more recent traditions of Rat Race is a little impromptu seminar of training that goes on launch. It was initiated by Nick Grease, who just basically stands up and starts shouting, "Anyone want to know about paragliding?" And then a crowd forms around him, and he gets a handful of the top pilots to stand on one side and basically fields questions from the crowd. So let's move over and eavesdrop into what they're discussing now.
Next question.
We're coming on the kind of dialogue you're having with yourself when you fly. Is it all in your head, or...
Well, does anyone want to tell the Bo Chris story?
No.
You shouldn't have used his name. Now we can't say it.
All right. Eric, you want to... Eric, you... I mean, from Eric's... Did you see Eric's video?
Did you yourself through things, or is it all you need?
Well, it depends on who as a person.
I think I talk to myself differently at different times, and sometimes I am... Sometimes I am like getting pissed off about what's going on and swearing in my head just getting pissed off about the way things are going but I find that the best mental state to try to cultivate is kind of the calm, what's the word, like kind of disinterested, like a machine.
Like
Kriegel. Detached.
Unemotional.
So, you want to be able to take in... I mean, that's probably the most critical thing, is to have as much of your mind available to notice what's going on as possible. And the more of your mind that gets taken up by either the frustration of how something happened or the glee at the fact that you got a thermal and now you're way above everybody or something like that, or you get caught up in the future or the past, and what you want is to stay present.
It's very zen. And it is. I think that's critical. I mean, I find myself, if I start thinking about final glide too soon, I blow it every time. You know, it's about, you know, because you need to think very, very, you know, it's ready. What do you do, Mickey?
Yeah, I stay calm most of the time, but when I really screw up, I keep on slapping on my bees, or when I landed, I kick on stones, but that's actually not a good idea.
You break your toe.
Yeah, almost did once. But, yeah, I try to stay calm, because it's not good. You're not focused if you're thinking of what you should have done better. You have to think of what you have to do next to catch up again. I think that's really important.
The only exception to that would be in strong conditions to be able to stay on bar as much as you need to. Maybe you need to be a little bit psyched up.
I mean, one thing too. I use sometimes if I'm mostly on cross country, or sometimes if I'm really stressed out and things are just, I'm just kind of, I need to jar my record. I know that I'm not truly calm, that I'm just kind of fired up and a little scared, maybe, you know, that I just have, I'm like, Jesus, I scream really loudly, you know, and I try to release and set and start over, you know. So if I'm deep and I'm stressed and I'm freaking out, it's only going to help if I'm calm. I'm only going to, no matter, you know, if I yell all I want, you know, unless I scare a shitload of birds out of a tree and they start thermaling, which I've heard has happened before, actually, and they show you where it is, it's only going to hurt you. And so realizing that, you know, you need to be calm, you know, you need in order to succeed. And so sometimes using, a voice as a release can help. Just don't direct it to other people.
Yeah.
What I try to keep it more mainly for myself.
Or like I've heard people talking about singing if they start getting nervous or lonely or whatever.
I do that.
There.
Yeah.
And that can be helpful without.
Can you do it right now?
I would take your shirt away from you actually instead of giving you one right now. Bad question. No, I'm just kidding. No, yeah, I do that too. Sometimes I'm always feel lucky if I listen to a song on the way to launch that pops into my head and I start humming it kind of as I'm flying around. You know, 6-7 hours is a long time. You know, what do you do for 6 or 7 hours uninterrupted? So you need to think, you know, psychologically, what you can do to give yourself breaks, what you can do to jar the record. You know, eating is one, right? Autonomic reflexes or atomic? Yeah. Reflexes automatically make you stop thinking. That's the only thing. Drinking, eating, right? Peeing kind of helps. But music also, or singing. Some people listen to music. I've
tried it and found it distracting.
Yeah,
it
distracts me too. Yeah, so he listens to music. So anyway.
So it doesn't help when you scream at me in the air.
He's not listening.
Can I get the speed bar technique dialed in? Are you guys always on it? Do you use it when, like, you're flying in and you feel a big thermal, you see a gaggle? Are you staying on it even in the turns? Or you,
no.
No.
You let off, just like you're letting off the gas.
You never use it while thermaling. I don't think.
Unless you got sometimes some. Not while gliding, if it's
questionable whether you're gonna get up again on the other side, and you want to arrive at the next thermal with all the altitude you possibly can, then you might be gliding with no speed bar on. But most glides some speed bar.
Badger, you leave the thermal often with speed bar, don't you?
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen you come at me a few times. I remember Shalane's been like, holy shit. That guy's hard. So if you find yourself sinking out like yesterday, it was just, like I said this morning, I was going last ditch effort over here just to get something. Are you on the speed bar to get out of the sink, to get through the sink, to just get to the next place? Or?
You're saying you're in a bunch of sink. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good time to use a speed bar when you're in a bunch of sink.
How about if you're like in sink and turbulent, that kind of rotary type air, you just go ahead and push your way through that on speed?
I guess if I feel like I've got lots of terrain clearance and it's not so turbulent that I'm going to get a big blowout, right, then I would. You know, I don't want to fly faster than, you know, too close to a collapse where it's going to invite a collapse. But besides that, yeah, I might be going through chunky, weird, turbulent sink with speed on if I feel safe doing so.
Have you ever had a big blowout?
What often seems to help when you're thermaling on a ridge, say when there's some wind, is if you're trying to penetrate into the wind out to the next thermal that's coming off in front, they're slanted, and so if you don't use any speed bar, you may just kind of get stuck in the sink behind the thermal and just kind of descend behind it. But using a little speed can get you through that and into the climb.
Here's a speed sleeve from CloudBase and FlyTech for your speed bar question.
Got a lot of wingtips.
flapping yesterday, and I wasn't really getting any altitude when I did that. But and I kept thinking, oh, maybe I'm not pressurizing the brakes enough. But man, there were times when I hit a little bit of turbulence, and I made sure I'd brake.
You know, I have to weigh in the arms. Do you mean while thermaling or while gliding?
The toggles. I was mostly traveling, but then as soon as I see that kind of stuff, I go, yeah, bring it. And look for it. Or something, but I don't know.
How are you loaded on the glider?
About mid-range.
Maybe try a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay. It's sort of related, but you're flying along and you're looking for lift, and you're just kind of making a line, and you get some wax or you feel turbulence. Is that a good signal that you're going to actually start searching around that area, or are you just going to look around and go for a spot where you think you might find something?
I've heard the idea that if you run into an area of turbulent sink, it might be a sign that there's a thermal just upwind of that, and it's maybe worked sometimes, but I wouldn't necessarily always divert to check that out.
What are you looking for? Like what kind of pings to you? Like, oh, there's going to be there's a thermal nearby.
I guess one thing is when you start getting sucked into it, when you start getting like lifted and sucked forward, that's always a nice sign.
How about you, Mickey? What are you looking for?
For you.
Carrie Castle, a very renowned pilot, especially in the Owens Valley, which is your home turf, you're very famous for. Give us a background of your CV, your paragliding CV, if you like.
My paragliding?
Resume, I think they say.
My paragliding resume started in 1988 when I was first introduced to the sport. I kind of dabbled into it for a long time because some of the earlier days of paragliding, when all the hang glider pilots were getting into it, they were getting hurt, so I kind of stayed involved, but yet on the sidelines. I didn't want to get into thermal for a long time because I knew what thermals were all about. Because I grew up flying hang gliders. I started hang gliding in 81, and then I was introduced to paragliding in 88. Since then, I've just been flying a bunch, and
I bet you're a competition winner as well.
In what?
I don't know. Aren't you a competition winner? I thought you. I always thought you were.
Well, yeah, I've won the women's national championship, you know, a bunch of times.
Well, that's nothing. Nothing to be coy about.
Yeah. No, I think my first. Yeah, who knows when the first one I won was in Aspen, Colorado, and I just entered it for fun, kind of like my first hang gliding combo. I'll just do this for fun, and oops, I won.
So now you run thermaling clinics and training, sort of pilot progression training. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I wanted to ask you is, do you notice a kind of difference in approach between genders of how they approach paragliding? So do you see a different style of learning with men as opposed to women?
I would say in general, you could say women learned it differently than men. For the most part, I think women make better pilots in the long run. And maybe even off the start, they look, you know, more graceful and more in tune with the wing. But I think their learning curve is much slower, which to me, as far as I'm concerned, everyone should be that way because paragliding is too easy to, they're too easy to fly, right? And the problem is getting into conditions that you have no clue. And that's what too many pilots in general get into. And so women, I think, in general, are a little more cautious and smarter. And so they're not going to get bullied, per se. I don't mean bullied, but, you know, where they might get pushed, you know, instructors or friends or whatever, get women to, you know, they think they can do it because they would try it and they think they could do it. And so they think the woman should. And the woman's kind of smart enough in general, I would say, because they're cautious by nature. And so they don't. And so, you know, some women get pushed or allow themselves to get pushed. I guess they don't get pushed. You allow yourself to get pushed. And then they probably find themselves in scary situations. And then in those situations, they either get scared out of the sport or they get smart and then learn to just, you know, follow their instincts. You know, and I think, you know, every pilot, you know, has these instincts. It's whether how in tune you are with these.
How long
and I think women tend to possibly be more in tune with their instincts, you know, follow their guts.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm just relating that to my own experience. I think it's taken me a few years and I'm still learning this, but there comes a point where you think actually you're not learning by pushing it, you're just putting yourself in risky situations by pushing it. But one of the things I guess that backs that up is I noticed that on your thermaling clinics, it seems that you have a higher ratio, male-female ratio. There's more, proportionally more women in your clinic than there are flying in the competition, which kind of implies that women maybe have more of a tendency to want to learn the sort of formal way in a formal environment as opposed to just throwing themselves off a hill and trying to figure out for themselves, which is maybe a more male attitude. Can I ask you about competitions as well? Because it's one of the things that strikes me is that paragliding, it's not essentially a physical activity once you're in the air.
Not at all.
So why is there a difference in male-female competitions? Why aren't there... It seems to me there's no reason why there shouldn't be women competing in the same, you know, in the same race. There shouldn't be a category for women, shouldn't be a category.
Absolutely not.
But in practice, though, the women aren't at the top. So why is that? Is that just a numbers game?
Gliders. Traditionally, the gliders are not as good the smaller they get. And women in general, I don't count because I'm kind of an average size person. And, you know, I'm kind of big for a woman, so I don't fit in that role. But, I mean, you look around at some of these women, they are little featherweights, you know, 100 pounds. That would be a dream or whatever. But that's where they get stuck. And, you know, and it's common knowledge that the smaller the, you know, they scale down these gliders, they don't perform as well. And so theoretically, competition should be glider size. That's how they should be racing, is glider size and glider, you know, performance rating, to be fair. Because you put a man the same size as a woman on the same size glider, you know, around the same weight range, and then it has nothing to do with male or female. It's all in our heads. You know, I think women in general they're not apt to take as many risks as a man because it's just not worth it, especially in our sport. It's like, why would you risk your life for a trophy? It's the silliest thing. I mean, if we had huge prize money or something, maybe it would be worth pushing a little bit more. But it's like, why? So we're not worth it. And, you know, it seems like men are, you know, they kind of value
that reward more.
Oh, maybe, yeah. For some reason, it means a lot, and that's fine. That's, you know, they're competitive.
Yeah. And so the result of the kind of and the fact that smaller gliders aren't as good, that's the law of physics. It's not
that
designers aren't catering to it, aren't doing their best. But so the result is that you get kind of competitions around the world here in the US where you've got a relatively small number of women, and I don't know if you're familiar with Judith Moll, a pilot from Europe. And she was telling me that there are some competitions where, as a woman, all you got to do is turn up. There's only three other women competing, so you're guaranteed a podium position.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels, on the one hand, it's a nice thing because you're encouraged to take part, and there you are, and it makes you feel great. On the other hand, it kind of feels a little bit patronizing because, you know, actually all you had to do is turn up.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, it is patronizing. I don't know. It's kind of, I've been to a few comps where there were prizes for first, second, and third, and that's how I ended up going. You know, one of my earlier competitions ever was, you got to show up. You will win a prize because there's a prize. And I went, cool. And so it kind of, that got me into it. And I think just the more of us that are doing it, I think, you know, that'll bring more people in. You know, and I think, you know, we always get kind of shut out, kind of like that. It's like, yeah, sometimes they recognize the women, but they don't really make a big deal out of it, you know? And when some of the women have done really well, it's just kind of, oh, it was an accident, you know? And any pilot that does well, people are kind of encouraged. Right. But it's like, if a woman does well, it's kind of like, it's just kind of different.
And is there a kind of culture within paragliding that you've noticed that you feel is gender biased?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I don't know. Like you're describing a situation where if a woman does well, the response of the community is to say, "Oh, that was a fluke." Whereas if a man does well, the response of the community is to say, "Oh, nice."
He kicked ass. Yeah,
yeah. Right. So is that a symptom of a kind of more wider? Is that just culture in general, as opposed to in paragliding?
I think it could be culture in general. I mean, to give you, for instance, one of my best wins ever, I was at a hang gliding competition in New Mexico, and it was a 7-day comp, and I did really well the first day, second, and going into the last day, I'm in third place, and I flew really well. I made a move of my own, left the lead gaggle, thinking that was my only way to win. you know, if I wanted to win, I did it. I got in. The lead gaggle weren't there. Time went by. They didn't show up in time. I won. And I called my boyfriend. You know, I was so excited. I mean, to win overall, all the guys on the world team were there, and I beat them all. My boyfriend at the time goes, "Why were they all flying like shit?" And I went, "Wow." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, why? Because I won, they were all flying like shit. How about I was flying really good? You know? It's, yeah.
That's interesting. Do you know?
So I don't know. It's.
Yeah. Are you still with that boyfriend?
No, that was a sign.
that's an interesting story that makes me wonder. Do you notice that women pilot make different decisions in the air? Either, I don't know, in terms of strategy when you've got different choices on option.
Different strategies? I don't know. I hope not. You know, I hope I'm making a winning strategy call. I don't think they do. I would probably say, in general, they might end up following more than leading.
Right.
Because they just assume, and I think that's across the board with men or women. Most people just assume, you know, like the story when Josh was, you know, they were all talking, you know, because he's done so well, now they just all wait for someone like Josh or any of the other top guys, someone else make the move because they know better. And that's the difference between a winner and a follower. You know, a winner will do their own. They will use people, but they won't follow. Even if you're with everybody, you're still not following. You're with them because you've chosen to be with them because it's a good route, because it's a good move, but not because there ain't no better. I'm just gonna stick here because that's, I don't know. I it bugs me just thinking about that, feeling that way, because I tend to be one of those that I'll show you, and that's not the way either. That's not a good plan either. So
that doesn't always pan out either.
But if you can just, you know, if whatever gaggle you're in is doing the right thing, and you're choosing to be there because it's the right thing, then that's where you should be, but not thinking of it following. So I'm not sure if that answered your question.
That, well, yeah, very interesting. All right, great. So thank you, Carrie Castle. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.